the business resume of Michael Bloomberg if he decides to run for president. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There's Donald Trump building his case to be president in part on his business record. There's fellow Republican Carly Fiorina, the former tech CEO. And the possibility emerged this weekend that former Wall Street financial whiz and tech and media tycoon Michael Bloomberg is at least exploring the idea of running as an independent. The New York Times reported that a Trump versus Sanders ballot would especially motivate the former New York mayor to run using $1 billion of his own money. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is here to remind us where Bloomberg got his billions, plural.
Mike Bloomberg grew up outside Boston. He was middle class and put himself through school with loans. In 1966, he moves to New York, takes a job on Wall Street, working for the investment bank Salomon Brothers. He becomes a partner, head of equity trading and sales, and then gets transferred to computer systems and finally laid off when the firm gets acquired. He takes his severance, a reported $10 million, and uses some of it to start a tech company, selling these fancy computer terminals that give traders information and data. In the 90s, Bloomberg grew the business, he expanded into news, and then in 2001, he's elected mayor of the city of New York, where he served three terms before going back to Bloomberg, the company, full-time.
Now, the word technocratic is often thrown around when talking about Michael Bloomberg's mayoral style. Talk a little bit about what's behind that.
The idea is that Bloomberg, as mayor, ran an administration that was focused on data and management. So one of the lines from his mayoral campaign was that New York City needed a, quote, professional manager, not a professional politician. He likes to paint a picture of himself as a problem solver and that with his vast wealth, he wasn't beholden to special interests. But he was also, you know, sometimes accused of being a bit tone deaf to the struggles of the poor, and income inequality in the city increased during his tenure. His successor, the current mayor, Bill de Blasio, campaigned on the idea that New York had become a tale of two cities.
Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson, thank you. Since the economic stimulus dropped away, federal budget deficits shrank. Until now, new numbers from the Congressional Budget Office project that this year, the difference between what the federal government pays and what it brings in will increase in comparison to the size of the economy for the first time since 2009. A full accounting of the red ink comes out today. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more from Washington.
The CBO says the deficit this year alone will be more than $500 billion. That's about 2.9% of GDP, higher than initially projected.
The problem we face is that the most popular programs, entitlements, are driving the growth in spending and therefore the growth in the debt.
Romina Baccia is an economist at the Heritage Foundation. The CBO says new and retroactive tax cuts are contributing as well.
But what's interesting is there's been a decline among both Republicans and Democrats in recent years in the share prioritizing the deficit.
Alec Tyson is with the Pew Research Center. Lots of people cared about the deficit back in 2013. Now it's been pushed out of the limelight by things like the overall economy and terrorism.
So it's not at the top of their mind when it comes to what they want to see from Congress and the president. But what we also know is how quickly views on public priorities can change.
Just like presidential campaign talking points. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
When you go to the movies to watch a film like Oscar-nominated The Big Short or even the more powerful 99 Homes, you might sit there and think, thank heavens, the housing crisis depicted on screen is finally over. Well, don't do that. Here's a story from Dayton, Ohio, showing the housing mess is not resolved. That city is focused on re-energizing the downtown. Yet at the same time, west of downtown, in a section called Wolf Creek, more than a quarter of the houses are still empty. Lewis Wallace of WYSO reports.
You can live in Dayton proper and never, ever see this.
I'm in a car with Joelle Jones, Shanice Turner-Sloss, and Jamaica Garrison, about 5 minutes from downtown. But Joelle says mentally we're farther than that.
Unless you're coming to visit someone, what reason would you have to come over? There's no stores. There's no auto center. There's no dry cleaners. Only thing you're going to get here is chicken and hamburgers.
This used to be a thriving area, but after decades of job and population loss, the Great Recession hit, and thousands of homes in Dayton were foreclosed and ended up bank-owned or owned by absentee landlords. They're taking me on a tour.
We have a burnout, which obviously has been sitting for years.
This house has walls stained black from a recent fire. Homes like this can become hazardous or attract crime. At one point, we pass by a big boarded-up house that's not actually empty. Joelle snickers.
I don't think they're in there making a pot roast.
Jamaica starts to back up so I can see the people inside. Joelle and Shanice react immediately.
We can't back up there. Yeah, we can't back
don't
up.
Back
don't
up.
Do not don't back up. We want to live.
There's nervous laughter, but this is real nervousness. Jamaica takes the car out of reverse. All three of these women live here and think Wolf Creek and West Dayton could come back. So their group, Neighborhoods Over Politics, wants the city to work with residents to create a demolition and redevelopment plan for each neighborhood. The city does some targeted demolitions now, but says it just doesn't have the money to keep up. I mention all the new downtown development, and Shanice shakes her head.
We understand downtown is important. That is the core of the city. But the surrounding area, the shell, is crumbling.
They want the money to come here, where they live. In Dayton, I'm Lewis Wallace for Marketplace.
And sometimes you just feel like an egg at 8:30 p.m. There is news. Sales at McDonald's are up 5.7%. Profits also beating expectations. All-day breakfast seems to be working despite pushback from some franchisees who say juggling both menus creates havoc. The stock was up about 2% in early trading today. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.